What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, the Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iyerinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detective shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, the Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, the Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, and welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you wanna make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
Greetings, constant listeners, and welcome yet again to the Losers Club, a Stephen King podcast. Well, we read the news and we talk about the news. It's something we do every day as friends, as enemies, as general well-wishers, and today we want to share some of our thoughts on the news with you. Stephen King news specifically. My name is Rockin' Randall Colburn, and who is with me to talk about the news? Mike?
Hey, this is Michael Monroeville Mall Rothman. Hope you're heading to the mall next Friday. It's Black Friday. How about that? And we're actually able
Please don't go to the mall on Black Friday. You will die.
No, it's not going to be a good time to go. There's still something out there called COVID. So, and also something called American capitalism. It's very dangerous. Speaking of American capitalism, we do have a lot of business to discuss because there's a lot of Stephen King business that's going on in Hollywood. So I'm excited to talk about it. Thanks for having me.
The hot news of Stephen King. There's much to discuss. Dan, say hello. Are you excited to talk about the news?
Yes, this is Dan Gwendy's Magic Flieger. I am super excited. Yeah, don't go shopping on Black Friday. I used to work at The Gap, and man, what a hellish shift that was. The only nice thing is it went fast because it was just nonstop. You didn't have a second to think for yourself, and you should be boycotting big stores anyway.
Yeah,
I'm excited for the King news.
Yeah, anyway.
I worked at Eddie Bauer.
Oh, this, I thought this was Chapo Trap House, sorry.
Yeah, I know, we're anti-capitalists over here.
Justin, say hello.
Hey, Justin, Juniper Hill Gerber here, and glad to know we're on the podcast with Warren Beatty over here. I mean, Jesus Christ, Red's called, wants his color back. Jesus Christ.
Justin, are you excited
supporter.
To talk about the news?
I'm excited to talk about the news. I was a huge fan of going to the Florida Mall back in the day. I hear malls are actually making a comeback, as a matter of fact. I don't know if it's a community thing or what, but if you do go to the mall, obviously make sure you're vaccinated and or wear a mask.
Justin, well, what was your favorite store in the mall?
My favorite store in the mall would probably be the food court mall store.
Oh,
it's not a store. It's a food court.
I would picture Justin just being at Spencer's going through like the nudie posters.
Yeah, Spencer's, you know, because you go to Spencer's, you'd have the marijuana leaves glow in the dark.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You'd have like Janine and Julia Ann in like string bikinis.
When you say Janine, is that Janine Lindemolder?
Absolutely.
Oh, Janine Lindemolder.
Who are they? Who are they? Give me a friggin' break. Janine is on the cover of Blink-182's Intima of the State, Randall.
Yep.
I know that.
That's more up your cool alley, I guess.
That's right. I'm a cool guy who listens to Blink-182.
That's right. Especially after 2000.
Yeah, yeah.
They're peak years.
We got a lot of fun stuff to discuss today in the King world. It's been it's been about 2 months since we did a Hollywood King, and there's been some big drops. But before we talk about the news specifically, we figured it would be helpful and fun. Everything on this pod, I want to be fun. I want to
always
that.
Fun.
We thought we would talk about some of the recommendations King's been making in his tweets, which you can get if you get our newsletter, which if you become a patron, patreon.com/thebarons. Oh man, so many episodes. But you also get a newsletter once a month where we track all of King's, well, his most notable tweets. We don't talk about politics. This isn't Chapo Trap House, but we... And then we also talk about some of the Hollywood King news that we elaborate on here. We also have essays. We have lots of fun stuff in there. So be sure to check that out. But we're going to talk about some of his recommendations in these tweets. We'll kick off with that. Just see if any of you guys have seen these shows or read these books and have any thoughts on them. On November 15th, Stephen King recommended the Starz series Hightown. He calls it raunchy and hard as nails. Great cast. Who here has seen Hightown?
Randall, I have not seen Hightown, but I'm going to bet my life that Succession is better.
you only have room for one show in your life.
Are we going to talk about? I don't think
we
this,
can.
Think
might
talking
as well
about
throw
Succession
it there.
Tweet. Are we talking about Succession tweet?
Give some context for it. Yeah.
Stephen King. I think somebody had mentioned that the more or less that the characters on Succession were mean and that they wouldn't be watching the show anymore. And King retweeted it and says something. Well, what's the exact? I don't know the exact tweet from. Basically, more or less, yes, these people are awful. I stopped watching the show.
He stopped after a few episodes. They were all horrible or something like that. Which, yeah. Come on, Stevie.
Yeah, it's like prestige TV. It's the best show on TV right now.
But also,
it is the best show on TV right now.
I don't. Why do we need likable characters? I mean, has anyone here read Salem's Lot? Like, the lead character's not likable.
Yeah, but he's
he's hung. I mean, he's no Kendall Roy, I guess, but he has written some anti-heroes before, you know, like, I mean, for Christ's sake, like Jack Torrance, you follow him around the entire book and he's a troublemaker, here's the thing though,
Mike, that's why he doesn't like Kubrick's The Shining, because
that's true.
There's no humanity in Jack Nicholson's performance, and his whole thing is like, no, like Jack, deep down, there is a seed of a good person in there.
Well, I would argue that there is a lot of humanity in Succession.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I think he's being a bit of a boomer. We can set that aside and just say we can say that Hightown probably has a lot of likable characters on it. One of them played by the great James Badge Dale.
Oh,
Justo, I know you're a fan.
I'll take back my guaranteed my life on it.
Yeah.
I am a huge James Badge Dale fan.
Same.
Dating back to 24, Rubicon. I'm not being sarcastic. The Pacific. The list goes on and on. How about
The Empty Man?
Which I still haven't seen.
It's fine.
Yeah.
About that Sparrow Creek movie that came out a couple years ago?
Oh, I saw that. It's good.
That was good.
It didn't
good.
Like blow me away, but I liked it a lot.
It was good. He was really good in it again, though. Yeah. A good actor. Good actor.
We'll say, gun to my head, and you have to name any other, like, you know, movies or TV shows that any of the other co-stars have been in. I'm dead. Like, the only name I recognize here is James Badge Dale. I don't recognize
it. It would be funny if somebody did do that. Like, put a gun to your head and said, tell me a movie that someone in Hightown has been in. It's not James Badge Dale.
Well, hey, look, you've just got, you know, that is your charge and prompt, constant listeners. If you find me, you could be a little jigsaw over here and, you know, torture me with it.
Yeah. I feel like this with Starz programs, too. They never finish strong. Like, the last Starz program I watched in earnest was American Gods. And they all kind of just have this, like, fizzling effect over the seasons. They never keep any kind of momentum.
Yeah, they'll kind of just stop showing them. They won't even have any finales. It's just like, that's a wrap on this program. We're moving on.
I've only seen Starz-wise, I think, Party Down and The Girlfriend Experience. I only watched the first season, though. But it was good.
Party Down with Starz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's a great show. I mean, from the beginning to end.
Though.
Well, it's coming back. They just announced it today.
Really?
Stephen King
is writing and producing it.
Nice.
God almighty.
Yeah.
All right, next tweet. Hold on.
I thought this was supposed to be a fun podcast.
This is The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones. Thrilling, literate, scary, immersive. Bonus, the most terrifying one-on-one basketball contest ever. Makes that kid and the devil fighting for a golden fiddle look tame. Justo, the most terrifying one-on-one basketball contest ever. Do you have an answer?
I think, well, for me, the most fun would probably be the, I think it was the 1987 slam dunk contest between Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins, with a showcase of athleticism, of jumping from the free throw line. Not terrifying, but definitely I was on the edge of my seat as a little boy.
Well, then this seems like a good recommendation for you. I've heard of this book. I have it on my Kindle. I've not read it yet. But Stephen Graham Jones is the kind of guy who I feel like every week he has a new book coming out.
Yeah.
But yeah, any fans of him here?
I've not read anything by Mr. Jones.
Well, unfortunately, all I read is Stephen King. So yeah.
best one-on-one basketball would have to be from the movie Catwoman, where Halle Berry and Benjamin Bratt have this weird like breakdance sexual basketball game, and their technique is awful. It's worth watching on YouTube. It's so bad. They like bump it off their hip and make it go in for like 3 points.
There's a lot of zooming ins and outs in that scene. Yes,
I'll say.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was gonna say, if we're talking about one-on-one basketball, you know, you got to go with the ending of He Got Game between Ray Allen and Denzel Washington. Hell of a finale there.
That's really good.
A little long of a movie, but I love the movie. But yeah,
I was gonna say one of my teachers in college slept with Benjamin Bratt.
Okay, well, we're going to give her name and address right now or later on?
Yeah, stick around to the end of the episode. I got
his name, and who knows?
Would love him to, maybe he can be on the pod. We can talk to him about it.
Benjamin Bratt?
November 8th, No Second Chances by somebody's cursor is on it, and I can't read the first name. Is it Rio? There we go. Oh, wait, no. Rio Ewers. A rip-roaring Hollywood noir that smashes the pedal to the metal and keeps it there. The best villain since Ian Fleming's James Bond novels. That's a bold statement.
Christ.
Available in February of 22, but maybe order now. This one is hot. Just saying. Love the just saying. Also, pedal to the metal, he's 1 degree away from high-octane thriller, which is the best thing you can say about any movie.
High-octane thriller, right to go home, you know?
Yeah.
First of all, this title seems a little unfair. No second chances. I mean, let's give somebody a chance here.
Yeah.
Second, I wonder though if he's seen Succession, because I think one of my favorite villains of recent history is Logan Roy, played by now I'm losing my
Brian
mind.
Cox.
Brian Cox.
Like, you'd think that he would give Succession a second chance, but I guess he subscribes to the no second chances rule.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I blame this book. Okay. Available in February of 22, but maybe, I just read that. November 1st, he tweeted, "Is Why the Last Man really canceled? Please say not. Although far from perfect, and some of the scenes are so dark you can't tell who's talking, it's one of the most interesting shows on TV. Come on, Hulu, or somebody, don't leave me hanging." So what did Why the Last Man do to get canceled? Did it, you know,
I heard
someone?
Production was just awful. Like, I read the comics. Like, I'm a big fan of the comic series, but I heard this was just like a bland milquetoast. You know, like, all the set pieces are very predictable.
There were a lot of delays. Believe it or not, I actually have a sincere answer for this. There were a lot of delays. But like Dan said, this has been plagued in production hell. It was also delayed by years and years and years of development. Showrunners starting and leaving. They like scrapped the original pilot, apparently. But the problem was there were so many delays that cast members weren't contracted right away. So they had the opportunity to go do other things or get paid a lot of money. And I guess FX said it wasn't worth, you know, doling out that much more cash. But again, I mean, as popular as this comic was, it was one of those things that just seemed doomed from the start. Like, there was just, I don't know what the audience is at this moment in time for Why the Last Man.
Yeah, I know Barry Keoghan was attached at some point, but then he got that Marvel call, so he's one of the Eternals. Would have liked to see him as Why the Last Man. But why am I going to watch this show if Barry Keoghan's not on it?
A lot of rumors about Keoghan right now, about certain villains he may be playing next year in a little movie called Dune Part 2.
No shit.
Yeah, so that'd be interesting.
Well, that's exciting. Okay, Why the Last Man is canceled, but maybe Hulu. I mean, getting a bump from King, I mean, that's got to help. That's got to maybe raise a few eyebrows on the socials, in the boardrooms, whatever. October 25th, he tweeted, "I got an advanced look at Last Night in Soho and plan to see it again when it opens on Friday. I hardly ever rewatch. There's so many good things out there, but this one is special. Time travel with a twist." We got some right heads in here. Where's the Soho heads?
I got to see it, right? Yeah, I saw it a week ago. I thought it was fine. You know, I'm actually a big Wright fan. Probably the biggest Edgar Wright fan on this podcast, but I just felt that the characters were a little flat. I thought stylishly it looked great. Some of his sharpest direction. The he pays in debt to the actual 60s a little bit, where it's a love letter, you know. And I don't know. It's thrilling. It's got some really interesting twists and turns in there. But for me, I wanted a little bit more from the characters. I just didn't really get much from them.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big Wright fan as well. I mean, when he's on fire, he's unbelievable. He's so precise. Mm-hmm. But somebody posted, bring it back to Succession, the Succession meme tweet, where it was basically their review of Last Night in Soho, and it's Cousin Greg going like, different times, older times, good times for many, not for all, but for some.
That's pretty goddamn funny, actually.
Love it. Well, I'll get around to that one when it's on HBO Max. Okay, October 15th, Words of Wisdom from Squid Game. Shut your mouth and grab an egg. Okay. He likes Squid Game. He's tweeted a couple times about it. I watched Squid Game. Mike, you watched it in one day, didn't you?
I did. I liked it a lot.
That's wild. Justo, yeah. Dan, have you guys really watched Squid Game?
It's funny enough, wasn't I the person that's like, hey, everybody, don't look up the show. I hear it's amazing. It's called Squid Game. You got to check it out. And I'm like the only one who hasn't actually watched it.
Yeah, you're like the guy who recommends. I had a friend do that once. We were talking some subject, and he was like, oh, I have a book on that. And he gave it to me, and I read it. And then I came back and was like, oh, let's talk about this. And he's like, oh, I haven't read it yet. I'm like, you recommended a book that you didn't read and made me read it?
Because I heard it was like, I want everybody to go as blind as I was going to go into it. And I still haven't watched it. And October was a busy month. I was going to work 8 hours a day, and then I was trying to watch a horror movie every day. You know, it's a lot.
Yeah, I like Squid Game. Funny enough, the first mention I heard of it was on this podcast when we were doing the Running Man commentary. Aisha said,
right.
Yeah, she's like, I've been watching, this reminds me a little bit of Squid Game, which is a new thing on Netflix. And I was like, I've never heard of this. And I thought it was like, I don't know, one of those depression cartoons or something they're always uploading. And then I literally opened Netflix after the episode and it was the number one thing. And I'm like, what is this show? Eventually watched it with my wife. And I enjoyed it.
Was number two Sad Horses?
Horse Girl. October 14th, Chapel Wait Epics is very, very good. Balls to the wall, gothic horror, all thriller, no filler. So King didn't tweet about Chapel Wait right away. I feel like he waited until like halfway into its run, which is pretty interesting. Although I would say that, I would say it's my favorite King adaptation of the year, which is a bold statement because Lisey's Story also came out this year. I think I enjoyed Chapel Wait more than Lisey's Story, but Lisey's Story I think is perhaps more has more staying power. It definitely is more artful, but I will say I enjoyed the simple pleasures of Chapel Wait very much so. Mike, you're a Chapel Wait head, right?
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
We got a whole episode on it you guys can listen to. We'd highly recommend it. Get that free trial on
Epix.
What's
going on here?
I'm promoting Chapel Wait.
Chapel Wait, I was not on the coverage for Chapel Wait, so I did not watch it. And Epix was one of these mystery box TV channels where you have to kind of go looking for it. I wonder where do you think it will end up though on a streaming service somewhere? Do you think it'll end up on Epix Amazon?
Yeah, Epix is
going to
get bought up
like
eventually.
Someone's saying that they saw episodes on HBO Max, so I think it could possibly get absorbed there. I mean, look, there's really only like three places for this, you know, for these loose channels to get absorbed with anymore, you know, before the big ones start absorbing each other. I really like Chapel Wait a lot. Like Randall said, I think I tweeted this a few weeks ago. I think it is definitely the best thing we've seen from Stephen King in terms of adaptations this year. It's just original. It's got just an unbelievable palette to it. You know, I really love the production design on it. It was funny because we had Anthony Bresnikan on a couple of weeks ago and he talked about the production design of it. And he was like, I think that they had a little bit more money. And I was like, I don't know. I thought they did a really good job. Like I actually loved the sort of, everything felt lived in despite it being, you know, from a different time period where they had clearly had to create the sets. And I don't know, I just thought the performance was really well done. And I thought it wrapped up in a nice bow, which is funny because, you know, without spoiling Lisey's Story too much, I actually think the book has one of the best endings that King has ever written. And then the show just kept doing the Return of the King thing where I'm like, okay, God, why are we still doing this? Like, well, you could chop off like 5 minutes here and you have a sharper ending.
I agree, Mike. I think the end of Chapel Wait, I think the cool thing about Chapel Wait is it sort of provides, like, I don't know, when you think of King as a surface pleasure and not sort of a deeper emotional one, when you think about what you want from, I don't know, like a classic King novel, which is like some interesting characters, some good creatures, some bloody gore and violence, and sort of, I don't know, a climax that that you can't stop turning the pages of. That to me is Chapel Wait, because it's not, it starts off a little slow. It took me a few episodes to get into it. But man, I binged the last three in one sitting. And that's the thing, is it's so definitive. It's not like most TV where they're always thinking about the second season.
Yeah.
This was very much like a story that was told in one season. And, you know, it was written by one of the guys who wrote Flatliners. And here's the thing, I've since watched Flatliners and I really think it sucks, but it at least is written from, like, I don't know, it feels very 80s/90s in the way that it just wants to tell a good story to get in, get out. It's not as much thinking about the brand and the franchise.
Wait,
and
did he do the remake of Flatliners or the original?
No, the original.
Oh, he did do the original.
Okay. Yeah, it's like Jason Flaherty.
The one thing about Chapel Wait that I'm excited for, and I feel bad because I got the screener, but it was just such a, I don't know, sometimes if you don't get it on, like, you know, the hype train, once it passes, you kind of forget about it. But I am excited to check it out because it's got Adrian Brody, who played Josh Aronson in Succession. We're going to keep bringing it back to Succession, folks. Like, I don't care. But he was awesome in Succession. His little, I think he's just like a venture capitalist. And Mike and I were talking. I was able to figure out the value of the company based on a comment that he made. I was only $2 billion off because they confirmed it this week's episode. So
nice.
Go Brody.
Well, it's interesting. One of the great actors of this century, no hyperbole, and I don't know why he doesn't get, like, maybe Lorne Michaels blackballed him or something, but I don't know what's going on.
Possibly. Or I think he chose some interesting roles and interesting projects, because I've looked back on a lot of his stuff, especially when we were heading into Chapel Wait, and I feel like he took some risks. I also feel like I feel like Wes Anderson didn't throw him enough of a bone. I feel like he got this great role in Darjeeling Limited.
He's very so subdued, good in Darjeeling.
But it's a very minor, there's a lot of like stuff that you have to like, kind of glean from the performance as opposed to kind of just like written there, which is why I like his performance in it. But then like afterwards, like, you know, he kind of got bit roles here and there. Like he didn't get another lead, which I don't know, maybe there's just not enough room considering that I guess he has like what, 87 leads in every one of his movies after Darjeeling Limited. You know, you get like Moonrise Kingdom, Budapest, what's his new one called? Like French
Dispatch.
French Croissant.
I think he's in there actually.
He's probably one of the mains, but he's still, I just felt like beyond Wes Anderson, he really hasn't had much cultural currency, right?
He does a lot of international because he's in Peaky Blinders for a season.
Yeah, that's true.
Lucky Luciano, and it's a pretty good turn. But yeah, he disappears for like periods of time, but he comes back strong, and it just might be the ebb and flow of his career, you know?
I don't think anybody was worried about his legacy.
I think he'll be fine eventually.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was singing hosannas about his relation, his performance in Chapel Wait, but I thought he was pretty good. Yeah. It's a cool show. I don't know. I hope more people watch it because to me it didn't feel, and we talk about this in the episode, it just didn't feel like a lot of TV these days. It felt very old school in its, I don't know, the storytelling, the kind of just general formula of the series. I'm just not used to TV feeling that way anymore because everything always seems like it's thinking about what's next.
Yeah, even the limited series, Randall, will have, sometimes it will, you know, tease the ending of, or maybe it's not limited. And that always bugs me, you know?
Yeah. And also it's not overly concerned with being recognized as a King property.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's pretty obvious that it was, for, to me at least, and maybe they said that wasn't the case when we interviewed them. I don't remember, but this smacks to me as like a story that an original story that they wrote that they needed some IP to attach it to. And they just kind of glommed it on to this Salem's Lot prequel, Jerusalem's Lot, which I think works overall. But I like that it isn't concerned with Easter eggs and stuff like that. It's telling a story that I think, and I think it does kind of do a stealth Salem's Lot, you know, riff in some ways, but it's so far divorced that I never get a whiff of homage off any of it. It feels to me like an original story.
I'm imagining Straker and Barlow driving their horse and carriage by and then saying, maybe next time. And then they keep moving or something like that.
They could have easily done that. I mean, that's the thing that's so, I think what makes it easier for them to stay away from the King stuff, or at least the more mainstream King stuff, is the fact that like Jerusalem's Lot, the actual short story, is so discombobulated. Like it's so like, it is a part of the Salem's Lot lore, but then it's also not. Like, we had a long discussion about this in our Discord, which you can join if you join our Patreon, patreon.com/thebarons. We had a very, very long discussion about for lack of a better word, the stupidity of not actually making the Chapelwaite Manor the actual manor that becomes the Marston House. Like, it doesn't
really
make
any that was sense. Odd. Like,
why wouldn't that be it? You know, it's a creepy house. Oh, but it's not the creepy house. There's another house. It's like, it just seems like you could have really, you know, streamlined it.
Sounds
but
like because real Prometheus of that, issue here.
Yeah, and it really is. No, honestly, that's a great comp because it is totally that. Because it's like, oh, it's not LV-426. It's LV-426-1 or whatever it was.
Why are we here?
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, the Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iyerinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detective shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, the Scare, features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, the Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Salem's Lot, we'll be touching on some newsy updates regarding that project a little bit later. But first, let's talk about perhaps the biggest bit of King news that's been announced over the last couple of months, which is a new Gwendy's Button Box book. And now here's the thing is, I think the big stir around this isn't the book necessarily, but the cover of the book, because the cover of the book, it's called, wait, what is it called again? Gwendy's,
Gwendy goes to the Dark Tower.
Gwendy's final task.
Gwendy's final task.
Gwendy V. Roland.
It features the Dark Tower, and the synopsis promises visits to Castle Rock, another famous cursed main city, and the MF-1 space station. What the fuck is this book going to be? So,
Randall,
for those,
I think we know the answer.
What?
Let's put it together. What's another famous cursed main city that has to do with aliens and maybe a space station?
Oh, shit.
Are we going to Haven?
We might be.
I mean, not Haven. Tommyknockers.
It is Haven, right?
It is Haven, yeah, right? Haven. Okay, it is Haven. Yeah, yeah. It's Haven.
Let's go to Haven. I'm so excited. Well, I hope that I hope they weave the Tommyknockers into this. And man, that sounds
please,
great.
God.
But okay, for those unfamiliar, Gwendy's Button Box was a novella that came out around the time we started
2017.
The podcast. Yeah. And it's a book that King co-wrote with Richard Chismar, who is the head honcho at Cemetery Dance, which does a lot of special editions of King's works. Mm. And Chismar's also a published horror author. And they're good buddies. And they wrote this, you know, really short, really gripping, fun novella that has some fun Castle Rock Easter eggs in it. And also an appearance from RF, as we know him, Randall Flagg. But I believe he goes by Richard Ferris in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, but then Chismar wrote his own sequel called Gwendy's Magic Feather. Have any of us read that yet?
No. Once King left the project, I said, okay, I'm going to do some other things.
I'm gearing up to read it. I'm just trying to locate a copy right now because I've got the new book that's coming out, so I want to make sure I'm complete. But I've only read the Gwendy's Button Box so far, but I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, same. Yeah, so we're going to read Magic Feather eventually, and we'll be doing some content around Gwendy's final task when that comes out in January, I believe. But yeah, I just want to read this synopsis here because it is pretty interesting. When Gwendy Peterson was 12, a mysterious stranger named Richard Ferris gave her a mysterious box for safekeeping. It offered treats and vintage coins, but it was dangerous. Pushing any of its 7 colored buttons promised death and destruction. Years later, the button box entered Gwendy's life again. A successful successful novelist and a rising political star, she was once again forced to deal with the temptation that box represented. Now, evil forces seek to possess the button box, and it is up to Senator Gwendy. She's a senator now. Senator Gwendy Peterson to keep it from them. Simpson. Well, then she's definitely not a hero in this book. So
I think she has Oscars as well.
You know, all I can think of now is the ending of Mr. Holland's Opus when the senator comes back. She's like, she's made it. She's a senator now.
Oh, man.
That's all I can think of at this point.
Well, if he's talking about needing likable characters in his books, making a senator your lead character is not going to go far in that
route.
What
if it was Senator Bernie Peterson?
There's no good ones.
Maybe it's supposed to be like, you know, Gwendy's supposed to be like a twinner of AOC, you know?
It's true. Maybe, you know what? I would not be surprised if King didn't try to go that direction. Yeah.
But I think it's cool because the button box kind of enchants her life because she's like overweight when she gets it. But once she has it in her possession, she starts like her skin clears up. She starts to develop like as a sexy girl. You know, all this like good fortune comes her way, but
she should have just become an Instagram model instead of a senator.
Yeah, but what's funny too is that they incorporate some real world, like some a mass suicide event gets incorporated, and it's unclear if she has any hand in it.
Interesting. But where can you hide something from such powerful entities? In Gwendy's final task, Horror Giants, credited to Publisher Weekly, Stephen King and Richard Chismar take us on a journey from Castle Rock to another famous cursed Maine city, to which we know will be Haven. Actually, we don't know that. Don't quote us. To the MF-1 space station, where Gwendy must execute a secret mission to save the world and maybe all worlds. This sounds insane. I'm excited for it because I don't know. It just sounds cuckoo, and I'm up for that. So I don't know who's bringing the crazy because I guess I don't know Chismar to be a particularly raucous writer in terms of writing stuff that's as wackadoo as this.
I only know him as a horror giant.
He is a horror giant according to Publishers Weekly. But I don't know. Is this the Moonraker of the Gwendy series?
Oh, wow. Shots fired at Gwendy.
No, does she go to the moon?
Oh, because I thought you meant because Moonraker's a very derided James Bond movie.
Well, it could also be that. We just have not read it. So
I'm convincing myself now that the Tommyknockers are involved.
Yeah.
I think I am actually very excited to see what happens with Gwendy and the Tommyknockers and the MF-1 space station.
Man, like Gwendy goes to space. It's like Fast and Furious goes to space.
Well, is Tyrese and Ludacris going to meet her there? I mean,
I would hope so. Maybe Leprechaun goes to space. She meets Leprechaun.
Hey, Bloodline, Hellraiser, anything's possible when it comes to space. Hey,
it reminds me, too. I mean, things can go wrong, like the space shuttle launch that Roman Roy launched that failed.
We're back.
It's good point.
Romulus. Good
point. We're back.
Sorry, I'll stop trying to shoehorn those. But.
No, I think it's good. I mean, if you think about it, though, like, it's just... Who in Succession could possibly make their way to Gwendy's
box? Maybe Logan Roy wants the box.
Oh, Logan Roy. Mission Control, Logan Roy.
Would Brody just be a good
Shiv,
Randall
give
flag?
Me the box! Give me the box, Shiv!
You're out of your goddamn minds.
Gwendy?
Fuck him! Do the count! I'm not doing the count.
I will say this. Because of that cover, I mean... Unless it's just absolutely brutally misleading and, you know, improper, immature marketing.
Which I'm wondering.
The tower has to figure huge in this, right? Yes. It has to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because the button box, I mean, if there's 7 buttons, and I think 6 of them represent the beams. And the 7th, I believe, is the Dark Tower or somehow connected.
Well, I have a great joke that would absolutely spoil the Dark Tower, so I don't want to do it yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a great joke, too, but I just can't say it. So.
I can't do it, damn it.
Trust me. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It is. This could be really interesting. But, you know, King does like to slip stealth, or at least in his later years, really reference his earliest and most popular works in some of these later works. I think he's gotten really into the whole idea of his interconnected universe the older he gets. I won't spoil it per se, but in the book Later, which was a hard case crime book that we thought was going to be relatively straightforward, there ended up being a pretty damn big connection to a... one of King's most popular books, much more pronounced than we would have expected. And even in Billy Summers, a good chunk of the final third of that doesn't revolve, I'd say, but it's a recurring motif, is a pretty iconic location from an early King book.
So he's Haven, Maine.
It's Haven, Maine.
We joke that it's Haven, Maine right now, but I mean, it would be more interesting than Derry, which is probably where it's going to be, right?
Yeah.
I hope not. I think it's Castle Rock. Really, where else could it be, though?
Well, they said Castle Rock and another one.
Yeah. So if it's not Haven, it's got to be...
What, Ludlow?
Maybe it's Tarker's Mill. Tarker's Mill.
Ooh, Tarker's Mill could be cool.
Let's go.
I mean, I would...
Werewolves
I just think
in space?
Yeah. Open the door, Mr. Werewolf. And then, you know, Richard Ferris comes in. It's like, Mr. Werewolf, I believe you're looking for the door to open. It's like, I don't know. I think I'm intrigued by this. I think that, you know, even if it didn't have King's name on it and it had the tower on it and it had an endorsement by King, I still think I would be sort of intrigued with it as well. I think anything tower related is enough to kind of turn my head, just because, I mean, what the last thing we really had was what went through the keyhole, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've said for years that I think he's going to keep returning to the tower. Like, I think there's more books coming out. And I think the fact that this is coming just adds more fuel to that. I don't think he can ever stay fully away from the tower, and the fact that he produces so much content, I think it's going to pop up through a lot of his works going forward.
And this is not one of those Tom Clancy situations where it's like Tom Clancy's character written by Richard Cheesemartin. He's actually back like he was for the Button Box, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Stephen King is?
It is kind of weird.
He's officially co-writing this.
In the first book, so King had the idea and he sent it over to Richard, who took a pass, then he gave it to King, who took a pass. So they kind of played a game of telephone with it. And I can't think of another book series where there were two collaborators, one stepped away for the second book, but then returned for the conclusion.
It would be
what's
weird.
Strange about it, right?
It's like if Black House had just been Straub.
Right.
Maybe the third one, which they've alluded to forever, which talked about in the last Bag of Bones episode, maybe the third one will just be Sully King instead of Straub, or maybe Sully Straub.
I hear Jack Sawyer heads to Haven.
I want Haven so bad.
He goes to the MF1 space station.
I need the Tommyknocker's claws to come to life.
Did you ever watch the show Haven? Oh, by the way, my pen exploded, so I have pen all over me.
I was going to say, you're treating it like the Faculty, where you're like snorting your pen.
Well, that's what it was. It was guaranteed to jack you up. By the way, Faculty, currently being discussed on Psychoanalysis in next month on another show.
Nice. Great movie.
But, yeah, I got pen all over me. Can't believe this. It's like oil, black oil, which is another show called The X-Files. Not Haven, unfortunately. But
did you guys know Stephen King wrote an episode of The X-Files?
He did.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
We have an episode about it you can listen to on our Patreon, patreon.com/thebarons. Lots of episodes and a newsletter, Discord. It's all the good stuff. Any other thoughts on Gwendy? Because I guess my general feeling is, well, and I've seen concern for this in the Discord and on, I think in some places on Twitter, which is the idea of the tower being sort of a sacred literary object for a lot of people. And the idea of King letting an outside writer, you know, pen stories adjacent to the tower, I know makes some people a little bit territorial. Not that I blame them. I do think it's interesting. It's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like another.
It would be like having some shill in like the early 1900s. Hey, oh, you must be Mr. David Copperfield. You know, like, how dare you?
Or like somebody doing like Harry Potter novels. That's
although the cultural I guess discourse out there would probably love that. You don't have to go down that road.
So I don't know. I feel like Mike, you or Justin, you had mentioned the idea of this being like irresponsible marketing, and I almost do wonder that. I'm like either the tower's got to factor in big, or this is, you know, I don't know what they're doing with this kind of marketing, because that's such a big thing to tease. And it's not just it's literally like the tower, the roses outside the tower. Like, we're there, man.
That's the dominant image. It's not like it's looking at something from afar or looking in a book or something. Yeah, it's the dark.
What if it's what if it's literally just like cycles her through all these different worlds, and then all of a sudden it's just like she saw many roses in a tower, and then next paragraph and it just keeps going, and it's like, wait, what?
And then she was back in Haven.
Yeah, back in Haven.
It does make me wonder, like, Mike, you are talking about this concept of like traveling through a bunch of different areas, like you know, becoming unstuck in the multiverse or whatever. I do wonder, like, God, how bad would it be if it was just King's Greatest Hits and Gwendy like visiting each of them, like going to Salem's Lot, going to the Overlook, going to
the hot thing in the IP shop. Right now.
I know.
Yeah, clown walked Everyone's... by, but she couldn't quite place it, so she moved on.
Oh God,
back to Haven.
Like, what if it's just a big IP bomb?
God,
like,
what a fucking stupid era we live in right now. I mean, like, just like, I mean, when you really just think about it, like I gotta go on a little digression. So I just went to go see Licorice Pizza. I'm not going to go and explain what I love and what I didn't love. I liked
Paul
it a lot.
Paul
Thomas Anderson. But when I realized in that movie, it was just like for two fucking hours, all I just saw was just like, A, just like sharp direction, B, an original story. And then also in an era where it was so far removed from any of the smut that we have right now, which I do say smut because I'm sorry. Like, I just think like this totally transparent cash grab era where, like, you know, they showed the poster for what is it, Spider-Man and Doctor Strange movie that's coming out. And yeah. It's just like, it literally is just characters like slapped on a poster with just references after references on there. And I'm like, how is this entertainment anymore? Like, it's just like someone reconfigured that as like an Xbox video game. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it is now. Like, that's all these mainstream movies are anymore. And so it just, I really hope, I'm bringing it back. I really hope this fucking Gwendy's thing doesn't do that, because like, I'm just so tired of this shit. Like, I can't, it's such a transparent cash grab. That's all I could say. It's like you get all these fans going together and they're like, oh my God, this is going to be in this and that's going to be in this movie. And it's like, yeah, but don't you see it? It's just suits getting together and being like, well, this X made a lot of money.
Marvel versus Capcom made a lot of money. Sounds good.
Let's X plus Y this. Like, that's all it is.
I have a question though. For Licorice Pizza, were there a lot of Easter eggs?
Oh, there's tons of Easter eggs. You know, you get Mark Wahlberg's character from Boogie Nights coming out there. And, hey, check out my dip,
Alpha Melina offers Elena Heim Coke.
Yeah, Thomas Jane pops up and he's just like, hey, have you seen my car? And, you know, and then you get like, and then it turns out that, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son is actually just Philip Seymour Hoffman from Punch-Drunk Love.
Scotty Jr.
I'm just joking. God.
And it's CGI.
No, if that happened, then I would just choke on my popcorn. And that's a wrap. But fortunately, that didn't happen. So go see it. Licorice Pizza, well, December 24th. Make Christmas with Paul Thomas Anderson.
Based on what Mike's saying, too, I think as long as this, you know, propels and moves the Dark Tower movie, here we go on IP again, the Dark Tower story forward, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
But again, if it's just a whole bunch of, oh, hey, remember this part in the Dark Tower, everybody? That we're trying to recapture that moment that we loved when we read it 10, 20 years ago? I'm so done with that storytelling. I'm just done
exhausting.
With it. It's exhausting.
Enough! Okay.
But we got some really positive things to start talking about. Don't worry, because I see what we're about to talk about.
Speaking of, we have an arrival here on the podcast. It's Mr. Bozeman, long time friend of the pod. And so Rob Savage, director of Host and the upcoming Dash Cam. I haven't seen Dash Cam, but we're big fans of Host, which was a Shudder movie that was set entirely over Zoom. The only good thing to come out of Zoom in terms of art over this last couple of years. He's going to be directing an adaptation of Night Shift's The Boogeyman, one of Stephen King's earliest published stories. But we've been talking about this for a couple of years. I feel like we've been talking about this since the old days. Like, this is something that studios have been wanting to make into a project. I remember the guys who wrote The Quiet Place, I remember, were attached at one point. It looks like their draft was rewritten by a guy named Mark Heyman, who wrote Black Swan, I guess. And then Savage is doing a rewrite now on
I got here.
The guy who wrote Malignant, or woman maybe, Akilah Cooper, I'm not sure. And the Quiet Place guys did drafts. And then the guy who wrote Black Swan, Mark Heyman, he's the one who did the latest rewrite. And Rob Savage is directing that. So that's what is happening on that front. Here's the logline, which is pretty much nothing like the story, which we'll get to. The logline: still reeling from the tragic death of their mother, a teenage girl and her little brother find themselves plagued by a sadistic presence in their house and struggle to get their grieving father to pay attention before it's too late. Whereas the story is about a man seeing a psychiatrist who's talking about how all of his kids keep dying. And each time one of them dies, they scream, "The boogeyman." And then guess what? Shocker. The psychiatrist is the boogeyman. So no therapy for you, sir. Maybe if that therapist went to therapy, this wouldn't happen.
Mm.
I'm just kidding.
I'm pretty excited for this one. I'm actually trying to get Rob Savage on the show to talk about it, just because I was a huge fan of Host. Like Host is one of the few original films in the last few years that just kind of blew me away. Came at a great time last year, obviously, because we were in quarantine, we were all on Zoom, and I just didn't expect something that original and that dynamic to come out. And it was made during the pandemic, which is that more astounding. I've heard, you know, mixed things about dash cam, but the one thing I will say is that it's strikingly original. Like, it's something that we haven't seen. And so I'm hoping he kind of brings that, you know, for lack of a better word, magic to this, you know. Cause I mean, it is an interesting project for him to stumble upon, right? Like, I feel like with him doing Host and then also dash cam, there's an energy and a momentum there, and to kind of dial it back for a property that, as you said, Randall, has been kicking around for a few years. And it seems like even the Quiet Place writers were kind of like, all right, we're done.
Yeah.
It's interesting. He must have some sort of hook. I'm interested to talk to him about it, because this is a great story. We love this story.
I also like Zoom, aka Host, as it was later called, quite a lot, actually. I agree. It was the best Zoom thing to come out, Randall, from the nightmare that we went through last year, especially.
You're discounting the George Lucas talk show. That's a great Zoom edition as well. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
What needs to be said, obviously. It's not really a concern. It's just, it's a wait and see, because between this and dash cam, these are kind of more experimental films. And this sounds like it's going to be just straight up. I'm assuming it would be a straight up just regular motion picture. So, you know, I mean, let's be honest, Eduardo Sanchez, who did Blair Witch, he wasn't really able to get out of that in terms of making a real movie. Right. So let's see if Mr. Savage can make a proper movie, you know, and you know, again, I thought Host was terrific, but let's see what he can do.
Are you saying that movies filmed over Zoom are not proper movies?
I think movies shot with four cameras and a Zoom experiment in real time, it's a different experience than, you know, over the shoulder, left, right scripts. And I don't know. I think it's a different,
not the same as
type of movie.
Being on set with Jack Nicholson and Harrison Ford and the big boys of cinema.
Of course.
If I could weigh in on this too. In the meanwhile, there's a movie on Disney Plus called Mr. Boogity that actually...
Mr. Boogity. Thank you very much.
Is it Boogity?
I think it's Boogity.
I put the image in the document.
I watched it growing up. I'm all familiar. Don't 1986
original
anything?
Disney Sunday night movie.
You know who the father is.
Is it Aston?
No, Mr. Mosser, who plays Stanley in the It miniseries.
Ah, yeah, Richard Mosser. That's true. Yeah, because I listen to Podcast The Ride, and they're like obsessed with this film series, because they also have Bride of Boogity or Boogity.
Yep, oh my God.
Wonderful World of Disney.
Worth checking out in the meanwhile, though, as you're waiting for the proper Mr. Boogity to come out.
I will say this, jump on top of that. Speaking of Mr. Boogity, thoughts and prayers go out to the daughter in Mr. Boogity, Chrissy Swanson, who is currently battling some COVID things. And we wish her all the best, obviously, here at the Losers Club.
Well, Dan, thank you for recommending a Disney movie from 25 years ago. Let's, any other thoughts?
35 years ago. The golden era of Disney.
God, this episode is ridiculous.
Oh, we've gone way beyond
this.
This
is amazing.
Hey, don't worry.
I saw
some news bits coming up, and we will be going right back to hell.
Just getting warmed up.
Speaking of Disney, this is kind of like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Am I right?
My God. I feel like I'm going straight to hell at the end.
Oh, my God. The Clash.
So, Bozeman.
I am now laughing at the Mr. Boogity picture, though. Don't worry. I just stumbled upon it in the notes.
I think the thing about Boogeyman that the studio is so committed to making this thing happen is that, you know, something like the Boogeyman is such a malleable entity that can be kind of turned into whatever effects are popular in Hollywood at the moment in terms of creature design. I mean, the Boogeyman could be, you know, a fish creature. It could be a big gorilla.
I'm imagining the poster now of a closet door with a gorilla hand. He's coming.
But I wonder if this could be like almost like Salem's Lot, because I don't think the Boogeyman story to me, that feels like a Creepshow episode. I don't think there's enough there.
I agree. That's the other issue.
In the
right?
source material, and especially with like the kind of twist. But if they just want to use it loosely for like the title or IP or whatever you want to call it, they could stretch it out into something.
You know what would be kind of cool is if the actual, I can't even get with the straight face, but.
I got one. Mike.
No, but I will say, no, this isn't even a bit. I just was thinking about something else in my head. But what would be cool is if the actual short story was like, I don't know, like an anecdote. Like you find out, like, you know, he does research on something, and then you find out that, you know, through there was another person that's like, oh, no, I'm just realizing literally the ending of that story would be like my therapist was the boogeyman or whatever, which sounds ridiculous.
Is the boogeyman.
Yeah, like, but if they could do that where they actually take the original story and wield it into that world, maybe there's something there. It's just, it's weird because like, if you think about it, like you really could do like a COVID Zoom style boogeyman adaptation and it would work. Like, especially if you made it only like 50, 60 minutes, it could
be sponsored
do really
by
well.
Like BetterHelp. Like, if you don't like your therapist, you can switch to a bogeyman.
Yeah.
Like, I was wondering if Rob Savage, since he has this experience with sort of screen horror, found footage horror, that sort of vibe, I wonder how if he could incorporate that into this story. Since we don't know, we only know the story. I have to say, some red flags raised by this synopsis, you know, that it's about teenagers and a teenage girl and her little brother, that it's about a dead mother, a grieving father, like that to me.
What is this? What is this? Like,
I'm starting to get hug
sound
me.
Effect here.
I'm getting hashtag hug me horror vibes.
That's oh, right. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think Rob Savage is a hug me horror director.
Well,
I don't
think
it's in
a
his
lot
name,
of
you know, he's a savage.
He's savage. Like Oliver Stone's Savages.
Yeah. So wait, Oliver Stone made a movie called Savages?
Yeah.
It's based on the Don Winslow book.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I just watched the new JFK documentary from Oliver
Ooh,
Stone. It's great.
I really want to see that.
Donald Sutherland narrates. We'll be talking about him in a little bit. Okay.
Surprised he didn't get Putin to narrate it.
Yeah. I just wanted to see, like, I know we've done the Zoom movies. I'm just waiting for a Zencast horror movie. So.
Ooh,
yeah.
Fun.
Live
I
leaks.
Would love a Zencast horror movie.
Mike's
horror.
Sorry,
Live
Mike.
Live Leak is a horror movie.
Yeah, I know. I love it. Mike's really gnawing on these pens throughout the whole episode. There's some comedy
face
where a guy
is going to be covered in ink.
It's like,
I am. I'm just waiting
on his
for
face
it to
in a meeting. I can't think of the movie, but I just remember the guy drooling. Ink. That's what Mike looks like.
Oh,
I just have
Pee-wee's
a phallic obsession,
yes.
I guess. I just keep putting something in my mouth. But anyway.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about Boogeyman. I just, I'm a little worried that Boogeyman, they're not going to hold true to the true spirit of Boogeyman, Bozeman, as he exists in King's story, which isn't really as anything because it's so short. I'm just being an asshole.
No,
I don't think you're being an asshole. I think you're being totally reasonable.
I mean, want it to be like Annabelle or something, you know?
Well,
even though
I
don't even hate two out of the three Annabelle movies, I just don't want it to be some franchise, malleable franchise horror bullshit where every movie they're introducing five other, the ferryman and the bride.
Well, I would not mind if the ferryman hooked up with the boogeyman here. I mean, to be honest with you, I'd love to see these.
Wait, who is the ferryman?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mike.
That was a character, a ghost they were trying to introduce in Annabelle Comes Home that they might still be making a movie about. But Annabelle Comes Home is a movie that exists to introduce potential creatures, ghosts that could be the subject of other movies in the Conjuring universe.
I did like Annabelle Comes Home, but it was mostly because it had that that Amblin vibe, you know, like
Spielberg. I agree. I liked
it's
it
like
too.
A harmless movie, you know.
Yeah, it's just the cynic in me that comes out. But I don't know. I'm wary, but I have to say I like Sat. I've only seen Host, but I really like Host a lot. I'm excited for Dash Cam. I like this director. I like what he's got to say.
What he's got to say.
We have been absolutely
watch out for ghosts.
Destroyed. It's just funny because it's like I've been thinking a lot about this lately. Is that we've always been cynical creatures, but I feel like this industry, having worked and left the media industry, I'm just like even more cynical, like to the point where it's just like. Like I'm so the distrust in anything coming out of like Hollywood.
Oh, I know.
That's the thing, Mike.
At a level.
Here's the thing, Mike. It's not like we're being contrarians. I just think that we've all of us have absorbed so much pop culture over our many years where you can almost pinpoint whether or not something could be a total disaster right off the bat. Like, nope, that's not going to work. And I feel like more often than not, look, we are right.
Yeah.
Didn't work. Didn't end up happening.
Like, what was the last surprise 180 we've seen? Like Mad Max Fury Road? I mean, it was like disasters on the set. Like,
oh, I feel like there. Well, I guess
I'm sure stuff since then has worked, but that's
some
the
people would
one,
say
right?
The Empty Man because some people love The Empty Man and that movie got buried. But I didn't like it as much as everybody else. I thought it was fine. James Badge Dale, Hive Assemble. Yes. Okay, let's move on. So this is sort of moot news because it's already over, but I thought it'd be fun to discuss. Dish, the corporate, the corporate demons that run the satellite industry are, they paid someone to watch 13 Stephen King movies in October and to chronicle their experience via worksheets and a complimentary Fitbit. Something doesn't seem on the level with this IMO. What are they doing with this data? And then when I read the movies, there was no specificity in terms of whether they watched the original or the remake. I'm curious why they care. But this was, this was reported en masse by the horror media. The movies the way you applied, you sent in like 200 words about, well, you're a horror nut. And then you they choose you and you get $1,300 if you watch all 13 of these movies and track your data across October. And, they would choose someone based on your nutty horror little write-up. And so the movies that you watched were Carrie, original, or 2013 remake. Come on. Children of the Corn, Christine, Creepshow, Cujo, It, original, or 2017 remake, It Chapter 2, Misery, The Mist, Pet Sematary, original or 2019 remake, Salem's Lot, The Shining, and Dr. Sleep.
Well,
pretty solid lineup.
I have one question about this odd choice option situation here. What if you chose to watch the It miniseries from the ABC, and then you still had to watch It Chapter 2, which is a remake of the second half of the
sort
ABC
of a rehashing.
Miniseries?
Well, I got to say, I don't think the good people over at Dish thought too hard about this.
You might be right.
I guarantee the only thing these people watch is like old videos of Nazis in World War II.
Jesus Christ. By the way, we're sponsored today by Dish.
Thank you, Dish.
You get if they chose you, they say to help equip you for watching, we'll give you a survival kit with a blanket, popcorn, candy, and some Stephen King paraphernalia.
I have a question.
Set the stage. Hold on for what is sure to be a terrifying experience. We'll provide a Fitbit to help you track your heart rate during some of the more intense scenes. Once you watch all 13 movies and log your report, we'll pay you $1,300.
Okay, here's a question.
Okay.
Have the machines taken over and did an AI come up with these bits here? Survival kit with a blanket, popcorn, candy, and some Stephen King paraphernalia. We'll provide a Fitbit to track your heart rate. I mean, what in the hell?
Could you imagine? There were boardroom meetings about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got in a meeting and they were like, all right,
Glenn.
That project? Yeah.
Glenn.
Do you have the movies
us? Tell us that Stephen King idea you had. I mean, go ahead.
It's
Let's
weird.
Hear it.
Because, this seems like a special project, but for me, it sounds like my everyday life as a Losers Club member.
It's like a passion project.
Where's
like,
my money?
Hey, did someone make the coffee?
I can just picture this, coming down to the board of directors, after weeks of grueling meetings, and it's like, are we going to go with the Stephen King marathon or a silent disco?
Yeah, God.
Hey, Dish, how about this, bro? I won't even have to watch any of this. Give me $1,300 right now. And I will quote unquote log my report for that $1,300.
It'd be funny if the person they chose cheated and just made shit up.
No, wouldn't it be funny if they did all 13, but then they accidentally did the TV movie of Carrie? And so they were disqualified?
Yeah.
Pet Sematary 2.
Yeah. But so I noticed that another site called Finance Buzz
bookmarked
are doing a similar study to this was just with regular horror movies to quote unquote investigate whether there is a correlation between a horror movie's budget and how quote unquote dread inducing it is. Fine. Okay. At least you have a purpose.
That's
I don't know why Dish is doing this. And that makes me very suspicious. I think it's just, I was asking my wife about this because she's more level-headed than me. And she's just like, oh, well, they're probably just trying to, they know that that all the horror idiots are going to write about this on their sites and be like, you can get paid to watch a horror movie. And so it just, and I was like, she's like, it's good advertising. You know, it's like tapping up a certain part of the market. And I'm just like, but who, like, I don't know. Like, is it Fitbit? Like, I mean, Fitbit seems like something that's at least a little more cool. Like, who gives a fuck about advertising for a satellite company? Like, aren't these people already exploiting enough lives? Like,
I don't know. I feel like they actually are struggling. I mean, I remember even back in like 2004, 2003, when my mom's like, Mike, guess what? I got Dish. I was like, it's like, no, like, why did you get this? Like, they, like, even Rainstorms, it like breaks down. Like, it's not a great software. Again, by the way, we're sponsored by the Dish Network. We're real big supporters of it.
Big supporters of Dish.
My thing is, I don't think this is the first time they've done it. Didn't they? I feel like they've done this like the last 3 years.
It's been done every year. It's so,
yeah.
I applied for one that was like a British company last year because they paid you in pounds.
Yeah, it's
it's more money.
Well, it is more money because, you know, the UK industry is doing pretty good.
Okay, well, I think it's kind of a no-brainer that you would watch these 13 movies, most of which are pretty good, so long as you watch the originals and not the remakes. I think we'd all say yes, and it's not like you have to watch them all in one sitting or something.
No.
You can watch them whenever you like. But I have a theory. But before I begin, Justin seems like he wants to say something.
No, I just posted something onto our document here.
Okay.
But we can move on to the next.
Dish wants to pay you $1,300.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I was saying, yeah.
So I'll just say this. I'm going to list 13 Stephen King titles, and you have to watch all of them. And you have the month of October to do it. This is for next year. This is the contest I'm running. And I want to know, is $1,300 enough to watch these 13 Stephen King adaptations? Okay. So I'm going to read them out, and I need a yes or a no from each of you. And my list you're going to see is a little bit different than the one there, and you have to watch every minute of this, of everything I name. So, one, Golden Years.
I knew you were going to put that. I knew it.
Two, the Tommyknockers miniseries. Three, the Langoliers miniseries. Four, The Shining.
Miniseries. Okay.
Rose Red. Ugh. Nightmares and Dreamscapes, every episode.
Oh, Lord.
Bag of Bones, starring Pierce Brosnan. The Mist TV series.
Ooh.
Under the Dome.
Forgot about that.
The Dead Zone TV series.
That's your bright spot.
77 episodes. Haven, the series, 78 episodes. The Stand TV series, 2021 CBS All Access. The last one, Dolan's Cadillac.
All right, so what's the question again? Which one would we...
You need to watch all of that in 30 days, 31 days.
Okay.
Would you do that for $1,300?
No, I'll tell you why. Because of the 77 episode and 78 episode, respectively, of the Dead Zone. I love TV, but we've talked about this before. I cannot sit there and watch 10 hours of a TV show in one day. So I can't even imagine having to do all of this.
Yeah, it would break down to be like less than minimum wage with the amount of time it would take.
Even in this economy.
The sad thing is I've seen like 85% of what you listed already, but this TV series would be the drag.
Is the 25% Haven 78 episodes?
That's like 90% right there.
I did come up with a list that's a little more, it's a little less of the TV shows because you had asked to put together a list. And many of them are crossovers with yours. Maybe this is more accommodating and I can get Justin to agree because I'm trying to get Justin to agree to this because I feel like we can get him. On our
we'll do a fundraiser project. And this will be Justin's project next year.
Justin's now I've got my own list of the 13 worst. So let's see what you got. Let's see if we get some crossover.
Okay, cool. So here's my 13. And only three of them are TV shows, I guess. So I had Children of the Corn, Mangler, Graveyard Shift, The Lawnmower Man, The Night Flyer, Secret Window, In the Tall Grass, Dolan's Cadillac, Maximum Overdrive.
Poor Dolan's Cadillac.
I know. It's not good. And that this is coming from a Christian Slater fan. I said Maximum Overdrive. Riding the Bullet. The Shining miniseries, which we learned in 2017 how tough that is to get through. Under the Dome TV show and also the Mist TV show. Now, Under the Dome and Under the Dome, I believe has two seasons, so that might be rough.
Yes, I think so.
But two or three. The Mist is only one season, so hey, there's that. Mm-hmm. So might be a little easier. I don't know.
All right, here's what I got for you. Sleepwalkers.
Oh,
Mercy.
Oh yeah, Mercy.
The grandma adaptation from Skeleton Crew. Children of the Corn. Maximum Overdrive. The Langoliers, The Tommyknockers, The Dark Tower Movie, Dreamcatcher, The Salem's Lot Rob Lowe miniseries.
Hell yeah.
Desperation.
Oh, man.
Tales from the Dark Side anthology, which is technically, there's a Stephen King story.
Yeah, there's one. So we're gonna count it. It's like word processor.
It Chapter 2, my favorite. And the Pet Sematary remake.
I'll do it.
You'll do it?
I will do
it next October.
Oh, shit.
This is very exciting. I'm going to screen grab this, and we're going to. I cannot wait for this. This will be a great thing for the Patreon. You can like log in your entries.
Yes, I'll do it.
And I can tell you what my log credentials have to be, though, Mike.
Okay.
Well, let me put one up, and the fans can vote on who has the best list. Mine's adjacent, so it's a little looser. So we have Shawshank Redemption.
800 words per.
The Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank Redemption. The Godfather. The Godfather Part 2. Schindler's List. Pulp Fiction.
Tokyo Story.
Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Well, that would be actually difficult.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Jaws. Jurassic Park. I'm literally on the IMDb top movies.
The Matrix.
I knew it.
Honestly, I would rather sit and go through Justin's list then watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy extended cuts again.
This is also about my list. That's a little easier, obviously, is because there's really nothing in there that involves, 80 episodes.
Yeah,
well, that's true.
At worst, it's like three.
It just makes it a little too easy. I want these lists more punishing. Justo, one easy way to make your list more punishing. Same with yours, Mike. Swap out Maximum Overdrive for the trucks.
Oh, I almost put that.
Bus field.
The Timothy Busfield 1998 trucks, which I watched for this podcast, and it is awful. So anyways, we'll assemble a master list. Maybe we'll fundraise for $1,300 to see how we do.
I guess we'll just do a 24-hour marathon live on Zoom.
We'll do it live on.
God. I also
directed
like
by
the,
Rob Savage.
Just to mention the Fitbit, like what about when there's like nudity on screen and then they see you like getting turned on by measuring your heart rate? I don't like that.
That's what the robots want to know.
Are there any movies on that list that would get you horny?
Let me see.
There's got to be some nudity.
Sure.
I mean, definitely.
We started naming them all.
Definitely Cujo.
What's making you horny in Cujo?
A lot of sweat,
just taking down that cop.
Oh, my God. Okay. Now, I have 86 jokes, so we're going to skip.
Okay.
All my answers.
Okay. Let's move on. We've set things up. We'll revisit this topic next year. But for now, it's time to talk about some fresh blood that's come to Salem's Lot. Lots of casting has been announced since we last discussed it, including, I didn't even write his name down because I know I can't pronounce it, but the guy who played Euron from Game of Thrones, he's going to play Richard Stryker. He was also an Overlord. He played the villain in Overlord, which is a movie that I think is, beloved by some people in the horror community. That was like the Nazi zombie movie. Well, one of them. There's a lot of Nazi zombie movies. Oh, but yeah. And this is Gary Dauberman's Salem's Lot. Three no-name kids got cast too. One is Mark Petrie. And the cast now includes in total Lewis Pullman, John Benjamin Hickey, Mackenzie Lee, Bill Camp, Spencer Treat Clark, Alfre Woodard, and William Sadler. I actually just noticed I copied this list from a website. I won't say which one. And they say it Alfred Woodard. So not going to out that.
That's her son.
Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. So are we excited?
Who's Alfre Woodard playing, I wonder?
I think she's playing. They announced who it was, right?
It's Matt.
Oh, the
it's
doctor.
Supposed to be...
It's like Jimmy Cody.
Yeah, oh. I guess it is supposed to be Cody. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So
I don't know. It's just weird because it's like it goes right into what we thought was going to be. It's going to be like sexy Salem's Lot because like Euron is sexy and like I don't know why Stryker has to be sexy. Like he shouldn't be. And it just seems
This is the great James Mason. You know, like you're going from James Mason to the guy who played fucking Euron. And do people even like Game of Thrones anymore after that? Those last couple seasons,
I do.
I guess that's true. James Mason's pretty good looking. I guess I think
no, but no, I'm saying he's an older guy. He's a more, they got a great actor. You know what I mean? No shots fired at Euron. But.
No, the thing with Euron too is like that character was so miscast on the series that I think it soured that actor. Like I've never really seen him in much else. I think he looks cool and interesting guy, but left a bad taste in my mouth. And I think Mike's right. This is going to be the sexy vampire Salem Lot. And that's not what I associate that story with, is like, you know, Robert Pattinson type vampires. Like it just doesn't work.
I hope Rebecca Romaine plays Barlow.
It's just gonna become like Underworld.
I mean, we're being a little negative, obviously, but at the end of the day, I mean, Gary Dauberman is writing and directing it, so I'm
like Bill Sadler. Like, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, William Sadler is really great as an addition there. We still really know who he's playing. Bill Camp is the one that really gets me excited because like Bill Camp's really
solid.
I'm
a really big Bill Camp fan.
Great character actor,
and he chooses some really interesting projects too. So I don't know. I have to imagine. And again, you never know because we live in this era where you have to take these projects to get money, like because IP is the only thing that drives anything anymore. So like,
I mean, for God's sakes, John Lithgow was in the Pet Sematary remake. You know what I mean? I just feel like,
yeah.
I mean, guys, we can sit here and say, oh my, this movie is going to have Denzel Washington, Francis McDormand, Joaquin Phoenix, you know, and it's just, what can I say? What can I say that I've been saying for the last 4 years on this podcast? Like, I don't have any faith in this guy.
You know who I always envisioned playing Straker when I was a kid was the principal from Back to the Future.
Ah, yeah.
The bald guy.
Yes.
Because I remember them saying he was bald in the book, and that's the first guy that came to mind. Because Back to the Future, it's one of my favorite movies, and I love
that guy ever have hair?
He's also in
Man Masters of the Universe.
Yep.
Because then he stays behind because he's got like women draped all over him. And
James Tolkien.
Nice. Yeah. Related to JRR.
No, yeah, unfortunately not, but wish.
Dick Tracy as well. He was in Dick Tracy.
Yeah. So anyways, you know, we'll probably be talking a lot about the Salem's Lot remake as it arrives. It's coming next year, I believe next Halloween. So a little less than a year from now, we'll be seeing that big bad boy and forming some big takes on it. Mike.
Yeah, because we just revisited A Return to Salem's Lot, and we're actually pretty complimentary of it. It's a fun episode. You can get it at patreon.com/thebarons. Shameless plug. But I will say one thing that we did, one of the takeaways that I had in there was that I feel like Larry Cohen's portraits of a small town New England are going to look more like the Salem's Lot book than the one that we're going to get next year. That's my hot take.
You know what? Somebody who still does not like Return to Salem's Lot, I will 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Most definitely. I have a question. What would it take for you to be excited for this movie? Like what could possibly be announced that would make you excited for this Salem's Lot?
You know what it would be? It would be the reverse of what happened on It. Well, in the last hour, they got rid of Gary Dauberman and replaced him with, I don't know, somebody else.
I'd say that's possible, but they already started shooting. So unless
You know, they started shooting Solo and they got Ron Howard. Let's get Ron Howard in here to do Salem's Lot.
So here's a question to you, Justin. You said anyone. Robert Zemeckis tomorrow says that he's going to go do Salem's Lot. Are you excited?
He's going to say, I got this great technology from Welcome to Morrowind, and I'm going to bring it to Salem's Lot. We're going to do it.
Bill Camp, one of the performances I really liked was The Night Of on HBO, which also has Succession on it. So just
yes, it's true.
HBO knows talent.
You know, I will say I was watching Autopsy of Jane Doe, which stars Succession's Brian Cox, and it made me wonder, or maybe pine for the days when, like, you know, when there's, you look at like a star that's in the spotlight right now, and then you can kind of like scoop back like a few years before that, and you see them kind of doing a little more adventurous roles, just because, you know, they're kind of, it's not to say that they're a bad, you know, bad or unsteadier footing. They're just, you know, they're getting a little more adventurous, and I would kill to have like Brian Cox come back and do like a Stephen King movie or something like that. And if the thing that would get me excited for Salem's Lot is if we had found out that Brian Cox was Stryker and not, you know, Euron.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, that would be great.
I've heard of Brian Cox playing Stryker, but Stryker?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Blow it.
And one on Stryker, one thing that's, I'm not just trying to talk Succession the whole time, but Danny Houston also played General Stryker from the X-Men movies, and Brian Cox did. And then they're both doing a scene together in Succession. I just thought it was funny because you'd have like actors being like, oh yeah, I played Macbeth in a play, but how often do you have guys that played the same character in a Marvel comic then appearing and being like, oh yeah, my take on Stryker was this, you know, it's kind of funny.
It'd be funny if they, you did a like, shit job.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they like, deeply disagreed with
Brian Cox excerpts from his autobiography, he probably doesn't think Danny Houston's very good.
Yeah, he probably went off on him. The Houston guy's a piece of shit.
He's nothing like his father.
Have you seen my McDonald's commercials? I'm loving it. Have you guys seen those commercials that Brian Cox does for McDonald's?
Oh, yeah.
That's such a weird...
Well, he knows he can say whatever he wants now. He's going to have the McDonald's money the rest of his life.
It's just such a weird pairing, because I can't imagine him eating like a Big Mac or something.
Well, speak for yourself.
Do you think when when the two Strikers were in the scene together, that was when King was like, this is too far, I can't do this show anymore, I'm leaving? He was like,
that's what turned
Danny Houston and Brian Cox in
I can't
one room together,
the can't X-Men from the Succession.
We all know how King feels about his X-Men movies.
Love X-Men.
We actually don't.
We
but,
have no clue.
Yeah. What if he liked X-Men Apocalypse? That'd be a problem.
He's a big fan of The Wolverine with Silent Deadpool.
Or he thinks that The Wolverine's better than Logan. Then I have a problem.
Oh, God.
You know,
Ring, 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 ring. Hello? It's Mr. Harrigan's phone. That's my transition.
Mm.
And
I like how the phone answered. You could say it's Mr. Harrigan.
Oh.
Netflix's adaptation of Mr. Harrigan's Phone, which is... an adaptation of an If It Bleeds novella. We've talked about it on this podcast. Two familiar faces were announced to be starring in it. Sorry. One is young buck Jaden Martell, who played a baby Bill Denbrough in Andy Muschietti's It.
Young
the
buck.
Other, the other old fart Donald Sutherland starred alongside Rob Lowe in TNT's Salem's Lot as Father Callahan, which is on Justo's list of the $1,300 movie marathon. Now, two disparate generations collide in this story of a haunted cell phone that's definitely not cell. This one could be fun, but the leering gnomish presences... I stole leering gnomish from Desperation because I thought that was cool.
Hey, it's on brand.
Yeah, of Blumhouse, Ryan Murphy, and director John Lee Hancock, director of The Highwayman. The Highwayman, which I reviewed at South by Southwest. I remember you guys talked about that. They have us gritting our teeth a little bit. Production kicked off this month, so it should be dropping sometime next year.
Randall, real quick,
Salem
actually,
plot.
Donald Sutherland did not play Callahan. He played Stryker.
Yeah.
Oh, did he? Oops.
But do you know who played Father Callahan in that?
James
Rebhorn?
James Cromwell from Succession.
Yes!
On HBO.
Oh, God. Is he going to be sued by Greg? We'll find out.
We'll
next
find
Sunday.
Out soon.
Great actor.
Yeah.
Super tall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Donald Sutherland. So, yeah.
I like the short story. I am not excited for this movie in the slightest. Like,
you know, we talked about it briefly a couple months ago on The Hollywood King, because we definitely talked about
The Highwayman.
The Highwayman that John Lee Hancock directed. We don't have to go down that road again. But, you know, is this going to be one of those movies we're going to see at the top of your Apple TV where it says... new and noteworthy.
Yeah, exactly.
Says, you know, Mr. Harrigan's Phone, or it's a Netflix adaptation. So we'll
it is a Netflix, which means that you know they'll probably bury it with all the other 60 movies that they add every Friday.
Nobody will watch it, and they'll say it was the number one stream thing of the week or whatever.
Oh, actually, 200 million people watched it.
It's kind of like the Bozeman with. I just don't know that there's enough in this story to a feature-length film. I don't know why they wouldn't just do like a cat's eye and take like three of the best stories from If It Bleeds and make it kind of like, you know, like little vignettes or something. But yeah, there's not. I mean, the premise of this is it actually kind of is like that Joe Hill movie that's coming out where what is it? He captures
Black Phone.
Yeah, there's some similarity there. I mean, they're not the same exact story, but I don't know. I just it seems kind of a predictable story. To space out for 95 minutes.
Well, funny enough, the killer in the Joe Hill story is Mr. Harrigan. So it's even more.
Oh, that'd be wild.
Well, I'll say this. I guess the reason that I'm more eager to for Black Phone is that It's directed by Scott Derrickson, who I wouldn't call like one of my favorite directors, but I like Sinister as a studio horror film. I think it is. I don't think it's a great horror movie by any means, but I think it's a little silly, but it is very satisfying and also genuinely pretty creepy. And so that makes me excited for Black Phone, especially because he cast Ethan Hawke as the villain. Yeah. And that to me is just cool casting because we don't get to see that a lot. And
who's also in Sinister, right?
Yep. Yeah, and he's I love Hawk to death. I love Donald Sutherland, but it's not as if he has a ton to do in this story aside from, you know, be a presence from beyond the grave. Jaden Martell I think is fine, but I don't think it's not like I've seen him in any kind of mind-blowing performance.
He's I don't know. I just don't. This, first off, it's more sentimental than creepy, right? Like, I mean, there's definitely some eerie moments in it, but it's more of like a, I don't know, it's a little saccharine, which maybe is why the Blind Side directman, it definitely is Hug Me Horror, but it's a little, but it's not, you know, it doesn't come off as affronting as like a Hug Me Horror movie. Like, I just think that it works on page, but I just don't know how you, are you going to like hear the phone and then it's just going to hear, you're going to hear it like ringing as, you know, it focuses on the person who's going to get this awful fate happen to them. I don't know. I don't know how you execute this. It'll be, but hey, maybe Cy John Hancock will turn this around. I don't know.
But it's also going to be that, like, I hate when they have old people introduce the technology because it's always the same. Like, how do I even turn this thing on? You know, it's going to be, I think that's just going to be handled very poorly and embarrassing. Also, horror movies that revolve around some sort of technology don't age well because in the future the technology advances. So when you look back on it, you're just kind of like, this is not really what phones look like anymore. So very short.
Yeah,
shelf
I would
life.
Almost hope, because I think they do. Isn't in the story, Mike, it's an old iPhone?
Cause it's like, yeah, it's an older iPhone.
It's almost a period piece in that it takes place, when the first iPhones were coming out. So that's one way I think they could avoid the dated aspect of it, is if they, you know, do a semi period piece by setting it, 10 years ago or whatever. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't have a lot of hope in this one. It seems like I imagine with Ryan Murphy, Ryan Murphy to me, like, if you want to talk about just the dregs of modern horror, I mean, the stuff that he makes is pure trash. So, and not in the fun way.
It's rough.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, it just speaks to why I think we responded positively to Return to Salem's Lot, which is by no means a good movie, but was, I think we missed sort of the Larry Cohen of it all, you know, the sort of scrappy punk DIY quality, the handmade quality. And I think that allows us to view it a bit more favorably now than they did then, because now we wish people still made movies like that. So I think that if Larry Cohen were directing this, I might be more excited. But unfortunately, he is not with us.
No, he's not, unfortunately. The thing that I like that point, because it's, I so would rather, I mean, we talk about this on the Salem's Lot episode, but yeah, I would like to see like more, I don't know, audacious sequels like Pet Sematary 2 and A Return to Salem's Lot than like something that's repackaged as this like prestige thing when it's really not, and it's flat and lifeless and sort of just, and again, the movie hasn't even been made yet, so who knows, but it just comes off that way. Like, I just feel like, especially in the last few years with the adaptations that we've received, it does come across as just like, you know, you get a lot of people that, oh yeah, you know, there's a lot of love that went into this, but is there, like, it just kind of seems as if it's like this kind of surface level take with not a lot of, like, mindfulness to aesthetic even. It just kind of is there. And I feel like a lot of the projects that we've discussed today kind of come across that way. So I don't know, what are we excited most for at this point? Like, I it's very strange. I feel like this is a very weird crossroads where we're at in the podcast in terms of like Hollywood King specifically. Avenue right now. We don't know what's the most exciting thing.
Well, earlier this year, I think it was earlier this year, time is lost on me now, but didn't you do a kind of here's what's coming in the King universe episode?
Oh yeah, that was one of our,
that was 2020.
That was 2020.
Well, I think maybe it'd be good to preview 2022.
Not a bad idea.
Out, see what's in the works.
Well, I think a lot of it too is the, because there's been so many slowdowns, like obviously the quarantine, and, you know, people are not willing to throw money at projects until we figure out, okay, can we actually execute this? you know, there's also been a lot of strikes with like the screen actors and writing. So I just think we're kind of at this lull where we had so much King content come out. And now we're going to go into a little bit of a valley, but I could actually see like 2023 having a lot more King. I don't know how much 2022 has in store, but we got so much. You know, you think about these projects take years ahead of their actually premiering. So I could see stuff being in the works right now, but I don't know that we're going to get it next year. It might be the year after.
Yeah. I mean, right now where I'm at, you know, we still have The Long Walk. And I'm just revisiting The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Like, I think Andre Overdahl is going to come up with something really fucking cool there. And that's an original story that we haven't seen yet. I still think The Boogeyman has a lot of potential, especially, you know, given Savage. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for those two projects, but I'm just like, I don't know, I'm like drawing a blank right now. I just can't really think of anything else right currently that I'm jonesing for in the same way I was for even like The Stand last year.
I almost missed the anticipation that I had going into The Stand. I remember I was genuinely like, when I played the first episode, when I got the screeners, I was so like, I was almost sad because I was like, my big expectations could very well be dashed, you know? And then as we went through the series, sadly they were. But I do remember really liking the first episode. So so there was that. And I think overall I took sort of a perverse enjoyment of that series. But I can't lie and say that it rose to my expectations, although they were probably unfairly high. But I don't know.
I'm looking forward to
what?
Is I'm trying to be positive. But I'm being sincere when I say this. The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon adaptation.
Yeah, that's the big one for me. But we haven't heard anything about it. So I'm worried that it's, I mean, it's still probably going to be happening, but I'm sure COVID has just fucked everything at this point.
Yeah.
Hey, the whole thing shot outdoors and there's only like one character.
Yeah, it can't be that hard.
It should be easy. I mean, why isn't this on Netflix already?
Please don't put it on Netflix.
Major League Baseball to get the rights to broadcast the game over her headphones.
yeah they're really, the Red Sox are really holding out
the license. Like, yeah,
well, yeah, that's about it. I think we're gonna pull off the 405 because I think Hollywood King is over for this round. But this was fun. It was fun to revisit the news with y'all, get a little saucy, get a little spicy, and you know, rediscover our love for Mr. Boogity.
Cool. And Bride the Boogity, for that matter.
You guys should watch it on Disney Plus. It'll hold you over.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch Mr. Boogity as soon as this podcast is over.
It's 30 minutes.
It's only 30 minutes?
Yeah, but the Bride of Boogity is the epic 90-minute one.
Oh.
Mr. Boogity. Okay.
So Mr. Boogity was sort of like the...
It was a backdoor pilot.
Proof of concept.
Yes. Aperitif.
Yes. Yeah.
The antipasta course.
Antipasta course. Cool.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. What do we have coming up, Mike?
Girl Love Tom Gordon. We're going to be recording that episode this week, and it'll be in your feed a week from today, so you'll have it for Thanksgiving weekend. So lots of excitement there because I'm loving this book as someone who loves survival horror. So it's been a great read.
Yeah. Dan Flieger, you have a new Dark Tower Detour coming out. Yes. What can you tell us?
We're going to be focusing on the Bends of the Rainbow. So we got some interesting stuff, good guest, and also like to plug Succession, obviously. Yeah. It really is something. It's the best show on TV. It's the only show that, you know, it's that Sunday evening must watch.
Dark Tower Detour is available to our patrons. It's where Dan and his guests dig deep into the Dark Tower universe, explore little corners, lots to discuss there. So big applause for your first episode. Everybody loved it.
Yeah,
and yeah, so you can access that in the Barons, patreon.com/the Barons. Justo, you're going to be on our Tom Gordon episode. What's going on over at the Halloweenies podcast?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I think by the time this airs, we will have released our first episode on Scream 4. I'm not sure how that's going to be rolling out now because it's going to be two episodes on Scream 4, so who knows what's going on in your feeds as you listen to this episode.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be wrapping up December. We're going to be some more horror on the way, but definitely be sure to check out on Halloweenies, our Patreon too, which is patreon.com/Halloweeniespod for even more horror for
there's
you
lots.
Horror heads out there. Because, you know, there's so much horror. We couldn't just keep it on the main feed. We had to pour over into the Patreon.
Much to discuss. Well, let's all sign off with a hearty long days,
and
pleasant
nights. I got some hot friends. God, I got some hot friends.
This is the end of our show. For now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other bloody disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology coming to Prime Video on April 25th. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detective shaken, to find the South Side Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, premiering on April 25th.